WEYL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Thousands expected in D.C. today for what's dubbed a rally for abortion justice. It comes days before the Supreme Court starts its new term, which will include a case brought by Mississippi's Attorney General who wants to overturn Roe v. Wade. Organizers of this year's march say the focus is on maintaining abortion access.
We feel very strongly that we are in a moment where access to abortion is really being threatened across the country.
Deputy Director of the Women's March, Tamika Middleton.
Really, we're fighting for abortion justice.
Counter-protesters also in attendance.
Students for Life of America will be there because abortion is actually the greatest injustice in our nation today.
Lauren Enrique with Students for Life. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
The rally begins at noon at Freedom Plaza. When that term starts, Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh will be participating from his home. He tested positive for COVID-19 despite being fully vaccinated, but is asymptomatic.
Other justices have tested negative and will be in the courtroom Monday as planned, with justices sitting at opposite ends of the bench. Under the court's COVID protocols, lawyers will be required to be masked in the courtroom, except for when presenting arguments. This will be the first time in-person arguments will be heard at the High Court since March of last year. Sean Lanchel, Fox News.
More than 700,000 people in the U.S. have now died from COVID, among them two kids under the age of 10 in Virginia, who both passed away this week, one on Wednesday.
The unidentified child's death occurred Wednesday, 2 days after 10-year-old Teresa Sperry died at a Hampton Roads hospital from COVID. According to her parents, Sperry was in charge of guiding sick classmates to the clinic at her elementary school. More than 1,000 children in Virginia have been hospitalized with the virus. 12 of the state's 13 juvenile deaths from COVID have occurred this year. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
California becomes the first state to create a vaccine mandate for kids over the age of 12 once the vaccine's fully approved by the FDA.
Right now, the Pfizer vaccine only has emergency use authorization for that age group. Governor Gavin Newsom says once kids ages 5 to 11 have a fully FDA-approved COVID vaccine, they will be required to have it as well. And to those who question this, Newsom says there are already required vaccines in order to attend school.
There's 10 vaccines, measles, mumps, rubella. I mean, I can go on and on and on. So this is just another vaccine.
At least for now, there will be allowances for religious and medical exemptions as well as personal belief exemptions. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
The summer's over, but that doesn't mean you can't still have fun at the beach. Ocean City's Sunfest is underway this weekend. City spokesperson Jessica Waters.
Sunfest really embodies everything about the fall at the beach. You have the fresh air. You have amazing, delicious food. They have hay rides and kid activities. There's musical entertainment.
The festivities run until 10 tonight. WMAL Sports, the Nats lost to the Red Sox. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County, on the outer loop of the Beltway, there is a crash. Three right lanes are blocked. Approaching New Hampshire Avenue, jamming traffic back to the 95 interchange. On the BW Parkway northbound in Beltsville, there is an accident near Powder Mill Road. No reports of any delays. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, checking out the traffic cameras, all lanes are clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. And on 66 in Fairfax County, no construction eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, northbound and southbound between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not going to tap your brakes. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, after a delightful end to the week, we are expecting more nice conditions for this weekend. Today will be a little bit warmer, highs in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Now, later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the region. Some increasing clouds as we head towards your Sunday. We're expecting rain chances to be minimal. Best chance in the mountains and the Appalachians. I think the D.C. Metro will be dry. High temperatures tomorrow in the low and mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday morning update. 105.9 FM, WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi, the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, is with us. John, got to help us out. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing just fine after a week of very exhilarating but very demanding coverage of the news. I'm loaded for bear.
All right. The president went to Capitol Hill Friday afternoon, and he didn't come away with a win. He said it could take up to 6 months, and we got one of those come on, man, out of him. So what happened?
Well, what happened is that the president is between the proverbial rock and a hard place. He wants his infrastructure bill passed badly, because if this is not enacted, there is not going to be any Biden agenda. It would be like Bill Clinton losing the tax increase that he staked so much on in his first year as president, or Barack Obama losing on the Affordable Care Act. President Biden has said he wants infrastructure. Democrats generally agree with it. The progressive wing of the party under Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez say the $3.5 trillion package is just what they want, because it's first cousin to the controversial Green New Deal, with a lot of programs that seemingly have nothing to do with infrastructure, the building of roads and bridges and airports and reviving the moribund train industry. On the other hand, the more centrist wing of the party, some say the more sensible wing of the party, knows that spending that much and going into that much deficit spending on things not related to infrastructure is a formula for disaster in the midterm elections. Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona have been resolute in their belief that a figure of $1.5 trillion just dealing with infrastructure is the only way it will see the light of day in the Senate. And I might add, when the two of them speak, the world listens, because in a Senate divided 50-50 between the parties, two Democrats are enough to ensure that a big infrastructure package is doomed, dead on arrival. Smaller one may very well pass. This is going to take more than 6 weeks, Rick.
So a key congresswoman from the progressive side of the aisle seemed as though they might be backing off a little bit. What'd she say, and what's it mean?
Congresswoman Yapayil, leader of the progressive caucus in the House, toned down the invective a little bit against Manchin and Sinema and did not say it was $3.5 trillion or nothing. Rather, more talking had to take place. And I know that other members, when they went into Speaker Pelosi's office last week, said that one way or another, this is going to get done. So normally the progressive press and some members have been heaping a lot of invective on the two senators holding things up. But I think they realize if they're going to get anything out of Congress and to the president's desk for signature that looks like an infrastructure bill, they have to give in. So the momentum is clearly on the side of the centrists, not the progressives. And some progressives, like the congresswoman in question, know it.
Let's turn local as the gubernatorial race in Virginia heats up. Debate this week between Republican Glenn Youngkin and, of course, Democrat Terry McAuliffe. Education came up, parental control in the schools came up. And after that debate, where do you see that race?
I see the race just where it is already, a dead heat. Although the Trafalgar poll last week raised a few eyebrows when it showed Republican newcomer and first-time candidate Glenn Youngkin for the first time leading Democrat and former Governor Terry McAuliffe. The margin was 48% to 43%. In addition, his running mates for lieutenant governor and attorney general were both running ahead of the Democratic candidates. Even the Washington Post conceded yesterday that national Democrats from Joe Biden on down could be nervous about a black eye coming from Virginia. I might add that insults flew like shrapnel in the debate, with both of the candidates calling each other liars. They differed sharply on abortion. Terry McAuliffe charging that Youngkin wants to tighten abortion regulations in the Old Dominion state, and Youngkin simply replying that McAuliffe's view on abortion was extreme. Perhaps more important in Virginia, right to work came up, the ability to get a job without having to join a union. Terry McAuliffe at one point said he would sign legislation to repeal right to work, but then saying it would never get to the governor's desk, and Youngkin presenting himself as a strong supporter of right to work. Glenn Youngkin also believes people should get the COVID vaccine and wear masks, but he's not going to mandate it. Terry McAuliffe takes the opposite view. This is a clear choice between two polar opposites who in many ways are emblematic of their national parties. And sure enough, Afghanistan, Biden, and yes, Donald Trump, whose name McAuliffe brought up 10 times, came up in this debate. This is a stormy one, and this reporter said, no front runner at this time.
Story you've been following is that of Lieutenant Colonel Stu Schuller, Marine officer. He rose to fame for the viral video in which he demanded accountability from military leaders for the failures in Afghanistan. Well, that got him in jail. What's the latest?
The latest is that here is a lieutenant colonel, 17-year Marine, considered an exemplary officer by his superiors and leader of an elite unit in Afghanistan, who's now in the brig. Lieutenant Colonel Schuller is awaiting what appears to be a court-martial, and there have been pre-trial motions between his attorneys and that of the Marine Corps, but so far, no action. It's not clear who jailed Schuller, but this reporter is going to find out. As you said, Rick, he made critical comments about the U.S. policy in Afghanistan, and when the furor started from his superior officers, he submitted his resignation so he could be discharged honorably. So far, the Pentagon has not accepted the resignation, which means as long as he wears the uniform, he may have to go through trial, and that is only for an officer in any branch, a court-martial. The Pentagon and the administration are tight-lipped about this. My colleague Kimberly Hartzler from Al Jazeera raised a question to White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki last week. The president has said, Kimberly told the press room, that he considers Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman a hero for publicly criticizing the Ukraine policy of the previous president. Does he also consider Lieutenant Colonel Schuller a hero for speaking out against the administration policy on Afghanistan? To no one's surprise, Jen Psaki said, let me get back to you on that. She hasn't.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. As always, John, thank you so much.
Rick, it's never boring. Let's put it that way.
7:16, Saturday morning update, WMAL. Let's get the very latest on the traffic. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway in McLean, there is construction set up on the outer loop right at the Dulles Toll Road. No reports of any slowdowns there. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, outer loop in Hillendale, there is a crash. Three right lanes are blocked approaching New Hampshire Avenue, jamming traffic back to 95. If you're traveling between the two Beltways, 95 is clear northbound and southbound. But on the VW Parkway, on the northbound side in Beltsville, there is an accident right near Powder Mill Road. I have no reports of any delays there. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, after a delightful end to the week, we are expecting more nice conditions for this weekend. Today will be a little bit warmer, highs in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Now, later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the region. Some increasing clouds as we head towards your Sunday. We're expecting rain chances to be minimal. Best chance in the mountains and the Appalachians. I think the D.C. Metro will be dry. High temperatures tomorrow in the low and mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
7:17, the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. It's great to have you with us, and it's great to have Cheryl Atkinson join us. She is the New York Times best-selling author of Slanted, The Smear, and Stonewalled, and, of course, the host and managing editor of Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson. That is tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
We've recently seen the debate over critical race theory around the country, but you've got a story tomorrow and even an investigation here in the Washington area.
Well, what I wanted to do was kind of dig into the unique case in Loudoun County, Virginia, close to home, that is probably the only place I know of where a criminal investigation has resulted from a dispute over critical race theory. And that's because there was a Facebook group, a private Facebook group started, that was called itself the Anti-Racist Parents of Loudoun County, supposed to be a parents group, but it was caught targeting and trying to, as some of the users said, they wanted to infiltrate and create fake names and profiles to try to attack or go after people who were against critical race theory. They suggested all of these tactics, some of which, it was argued, were illegal. So that's how it came to the attention of Loudoun County Sheriff to investigate whether crimes had been committed. But interestingly, and some of the people listening probably live in Loudoun County and know this, as this investigation progressed, the sheriff got the names of the people in the Facebook group, the controversial group that was supposed to be the parents. And in that group, there were city officials, county officials, school board members, people from out of town that were activists, and the Commonwealth attorney for the county who would be responsible for prosecuting any crimes that were uncovered by the Facebook group. So there was this potential conflict of interest. The sheriff said now he couldn't go to his own Commonwealth attorney for advice on whether crimes were committed and how to proceed. Very interesting twist that occurred in Loudoun County.
We heard a lot recently about the protests in Cuba, and it got pretty intense for a period of time. Things seemed to have quieted down. What about the U.S. response?
You know, I think it's interesting that things really heated up in a historic way over the summer. People may remember hearing there were protests on this communist island of Cuba, and it's been pretty quiet ever since. So we asked Scott Thuman to go down to Miami, where there's a large Cuban-American population. They're watching all of this very closely, very concerned about what's happening in Cuba, and he's kind of taken the temperature to see what's going on. And also, what he heard a lot about was what the Biden administration should or can do, you know, what it may be able to do, what it's not able to do when it comes to helping the Cuban people. So Scott's going to have that story.
And there has been a trend in tourism, a different kind of tourism, where it is called medical tourism. And you will travel and have medical care given, typically outside the country in many cases. You've got a story on it tomorrow. What are the latest trends?
Yeah, that's the story by Lisa Fletcher. I love this story. I think everybody's going to love it. It has to do with a medical professional in one state that was offering medical services for a more reasonable price, closer to what it really costs, plus not so much profit without all the middlemen and insurers and all of those organizations in the middle. And he decided to advertise outside of his state to see what would happen. Well, people are coming. They're flying. They're saving so much money, flying to other states. In this case, I believe it's Oklahoma Lisa is taking us to get services and saving thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars on procedures simply by becoming, as we call it, a medical tourist and finding where there's really a better price. The prices for the same services vary so widely, you probably already know that. Hospitals are now supposed to be posting their prices online so that you can shop around. Not all of them do it in an easy way, but I think this is all part of a new trend.
Cheryl Atkinson, host of Full Measure. Catch the whole show tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock on ABC 7. As always, Cheryl, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
722, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, KT McFarland, and next up, some interesting new developments on AFib treatments at MedStar. Stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update. The Saturday Morning Update continues on WMAL. With the rapid advancements in the medical field, we periodically will discuss some of the newer treatments available for common conditions. MedStar health physicians participated in a landmark clinical trial which provided the key data for FDA approval of a new treatment for atrial fibrillation. MedStar Health is the first system to offer the new therapy for treatment of long-standing persistent atrial fibrillation. We're joined by Dr. Christian Schultz. He's a cardiac surgeon with MedStar Washington Hospital Center. Dr. Schultz, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Well, first off, what is atrial fibrillation and how prevalent would you say it is?
Sure. So atrial fibrillation is basically an arrhythmia where the atria, or the upper chambers of the heart, are quivering instead of contracting rhythmically. You know, the heart relies on a rhythmic sequence. First, the atria contract, the blood goes from the atria to the ventricle, then the ventricle contracts and goes from the ventricle to the body or to the lungs. When that rhythm is upset, it can lead to problems. And atrial fibrillation is, instead of having kind of a rhythmic contraction, the atrium is just quivering, and it can lead to problems with conduction of blood or flow of blood through the heart.
And what are the symptoms?
So patients often describe the symptoms of atrial fibrillation as kind of a fish flopping in the chest. It can lead to shortness of breath, just feeling uneasy, inability to exercise. It can lead to low blood pressure and generally just not feeling well.
And if it goes untreated, how serious does it get?
So atrial fibrillation, one of the major risks of AFib is stroke. And the reason for that is, you know, if the blood is not moving smoothly through the heart, it's kind of like thinking about a river. You know, there's an eddy in the river where the blood or the river water just kind of pools. It can form clots. Atrial fibrillation, one of the major risks is a stroke, just because the blood, instead of moving smoothly through the heart, it pools and can kind of circulate and cause clot. So that's one of the major risk factors of atrial fibrillation is a stroke.
And what are the traditional treatment options?
So historically, patients have been treated with medications and catheter ablation. The goals of treatment are twofold. One is to prevent stroke, and that's why patients with atrial fibrillation are usually placed on a blood thinner. That can include warfarin or some of the newer anticoagulants we have available. But then the other component is treatment of the rhythm itself. Some patients, it's a rhythm control strategy, trying to get them back into normal sinus rhythm, the normal rhythmic contraction of the heart. Other patients are treated with rate control. So, as long as, even if they're in AFib, as long as their rate is controlled, they can be less symptomatic than before. Atrial fibrillation is not a benign condition. If you look at the survival curves of patients who are 65 years or older and have atrial fibrillation, their five-year survival is worse than patients with colon cancer or Hodgkin's lymphoma. But effective treatment can effectively take these patients back to a normal survival curve.
So MedStar Health is the first health system to offer the new therapy for atrial fibrillation. It's the MedStar Health Hybrid AF Convergent Therapy. So tell us about the new treatment versus the traditional treatments.
Sure. So I think one of the points is to know that there are treatment options and newer treatment options available for patients. The convergent hybrid ablation procedure, it's a new procedure that actually we've been doing here for about over 10 years. We were one of the original early adopters of the procedure and participated in the FDA trial sponsored by the company that compared head-to-head patients with atrial fibrillation getting a catheter ablation versus the convergent. Now, the convergent, the term is, the convergence of a couple things. One is it's the convergence of two specialties, cardiac surgery, working with electrophysiology to deliver more effective therapy. It's also a convergence of treatment of the atrial fibrillation from both inside and outside of the heart. If I had AFib, I'd want to know that I was looking into all treatment options available. And I think that's one of the points we're making is that there is this new treatment for patients perhaps who just didn't think there were options available. There are new options, and we provide the full spectrum here at MedStar. We'd love to see these patients.
And where is the treatment available?
We've been doing this procedure for over 10 years, and we're certainly the most experienced center in the region, if not in the world. It's available at two of the MedStar hospitals, at the Washington Hospital Center, and then also Union Memorial in Baltimore.
You can get a lot more information on the program at MedStarHealth.org. And Dr. Schultz, before we let you go, just a couple of maybe common sense thoughts for people about heart health in general.
Heart healthy lifestyle has many components. There's diet, there's lifestyle, there's exercise, there's stress management, and there's medications when needed. You know, it's important when dealing with heart health to consult with a physician, cardiologist, or your general practitioner to begin with, just to get good sound advice.
Dr. Christian Schultz, cardiac surgeon at MedStar Washington Hospital Center. Thanks very much for the information.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And once again, the MedStar website is medstarhealth.org. 7:28, the Saturday morning update. WMAL, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland are on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. The Women's March is coming back to Washington today.
The Women's March. Planned Parenthood and other organizations are in D.C. and other cities to call attention to a key abortion case coming before the High Court this term. The justices will hear arguments in early December from Mississippi's Attorney General, who wants the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision to be overturned. The state will also defend its ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Organizers say they're marching to send an unmistakable message about our fierce opposition to restricting abortion access. Rachel Sutherland, Fox News.
The march starts at noon at Freedom Plaza. Counter-protesters will be there, too.
We believe that the Women's March is ignoring marginalized communities and groups of people that really deserve a voice.
Spokesperson for Women for Life, Lauren Enrique, says they'll be there to represent those people. The suspect in a 2015 homicide in D.C. will soon be extradited to D.C., where he's been charged with first-degree murder. A judge issued a bench warrant for 32-year-old Oscar Ramos. Police say he shot one man to death and injured another on 295 North at Exit 1 in May of 2015. Police say a former student of a Houston public charter school shot through the school's door, injuring the principal yesterday. He then turned himself in. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Red Sox 4-2. Traffic and weather next.
Cookies for sale.
WMAL Traffic, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, Outer Loop in Hillendale, there is a crash. Three right lanes are blocked approaching New Hampshire Avenue, jamming traffic back to the 95 interchange. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, in McLean, there's construction Outer Loop at the Dulles Toll Road. On 66 in Virginia, eastbound and westbound, no construction and no crashes. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not going to hit your brakes northbound or southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, after a delightful end to the week, we are expecting more nice conditions for this weekend. Today will be a little bit warmer. Highs in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Now, later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the region. Some increasing clouds as we head towards your Sunday. We're expecting rain chances to be minimal. Best chance in the mountains and the Appalachians. I think the D.C. Metro will be dry. High temperatures tomorrow in the low and mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
News on the hour, every hour, every day, on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
This is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
So many questions have been asked about what happened in Afghanistan and fingers pointing back at President Trump and presidents prior to Donald Trump. And there was attention paid to the Doha Accords, the peace agreement, and a lot of question marks. That was conditions-based, and I guess, Tony, what stood out to you about the testimony, especially when it comes to the peace agreement, for starters?
Well, look, I think that's one of the first things that everybody should kind of focus on. So let's start with the agreement framework that was established for the exit from Afghanistan. And was that faithfully executed? Because Joe Biden keeps saying, well, I was obligated. Well, first off, when has Joe Biden ever been obligated to do anything? Just saying. Because he doesn't do anything he doesn't want to do. But with that said, only one element, Rick, and Milley even said this, General Milley even said this during testimony, only one element of the Doha Accords was followed by the Taliban starting after the first of the year. So why then would you continue to move forward to execute the agreement if the other party isn't going along? So, by the way, this wasn't acknowledged by the Biden administration at all, one iota, until Milley himself said it during the hearing. So that's, it's a super important point. Secondly, boy, I had to watch the hearings in real time to do some color commentary for another network, and what was apparent is, like, they constantly said, well, we prepared for all contingencies, but geez, every time we were prepared for something, things changed, and we had to do something else, or we didn't have the requirement in time. It was a tapestry of failure laid out how, yeah, we were prepared. We looked at everything, but we really didn't do anything to do what we were supposed to. We didn't have the resources available. We didn't have everything laid out, ready to go, just in case. That is a military failure based on leadership failure. If that was true, Rick, you would have seen essentially a seamless transition from one operational element to another, and we would have never known. It would have been smooth. This is what military failure looks like, and anybody who's in the audience today in the military knows what I'm talking about. And then you look at this, obviously, from the perspective of everybody through President Biden under the bus, rightfully. But the problem is nobody stood up and said, Mr. President, I can't work for you if your decision is going to result in the catastrophic failure of the mission. I just can't do it. Now, Milley considers that, quote-unquote, political, although he's been pretty tone-deaf on political issues. No, General Milley, that is not tone-deaf. That's doing your job. That's actually standing up with courage and commitment, saying, Mr. President, I cannot serve you if you're going to actually make a decision that will result in catastrophic failure. I cannot do that. But he did it. And get the, Rick, last time I checked, he still got his job. So what you've got now are politicians in uniform who are more committed to their own personal well-being and career than doing the right thing as the Constitution and their oath of office requires them to do. That's simply what he did. That is Milley. And that's what the result was. Catastrophe.
Let's turn to the Stu Scheller case. And yeah. This is the Marine that asked for accountability. He did a viral video, wanted accountability for the mistakes in Afghanistan. And that has landed him in the slammer.
Yeah. So put in context of Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who was a quote-unquote whistleblower, who actually, if you go back and watch his sworn testimony, he lies under oath, was encouraged to come forward, to talk about all these things that he felt was going on badly under President Trump. He was rewarded, essentially. He was selected for colonel, selected to go to the Army War College. He didn't get either, but that's another story. But he was not imprisoned for going against the chain of command and pointing out what he thought was wrongdoing. Now, here we are, 2 years later, and we have a Marine who witnessed firsthand the catastrophe on the ground in Kabul, comes out and says, hey, I have witnessed this failure. We need to have a full investigation and accounting, and he's the issue. He's the problem. Speaking as a whistleblower, I've been in his shoes, and I feel terrible for the man. But this is what happens when you have everybody in the professional political class, to include professional bureaucrats, who don't want to be held accountable. And again, Rick, this starts at the top, at the White House, goes through the Pentagon, goes through the Marine Corps, all the way down to these general officers at the operational level who don't want to be held accountable. So the moment you call for accountability, they're going to come after you. And Stu has found out the hard way. That's what happens when you stand up.
So ironic that Bo Bergdahl walked off the job.
Yeah.
We had a mission to go and find him, and then he ends up being celebrated at the White House by former President Obama.
Yeah, deserted. And by the way, and it's interesting. The other point on Stu is that he was put in the brig right at the time these other hearings we just talked about started. Gee, why, is that a coincidence? I don't think so. They wanted him off the playing field so that there could be no credible pushback on whatever they were going to put out this past week. This is This is Stalin. This is Stalin-like behavior. This is Soviet-like behavior from our own government.
Let's turn to North Korea. Apparently the
fourth
reason missile launch from the North Koreans, and they claim they fired off a hypersonic missile. Most recent was on Thursday. That's four so far under the Trump administration. They were pretty quiet for the last couple of years of the Trump administration. Testing our president, looking for some concessions. What are they up to?
So I think many of the nations we have as adversaries or challengers are now looking at the Afghan debacle and trying to figure out what can they do to increase their influence regarding whatever their military objectives are. So North Korea is no different. This hypersonic missile, first off, you got to start asking, where are they getting this technology? Because they are literally isolated, so you have to look to China or Russia. And secondly, you have to start figuring out what they want. What are they trying to do? North Koreans don't do anything without trying to gain or leverage something. So that's what we have to go look back on and try to figure it out. But yeah, I think you're going to see more and more of this, not only from North Korea, but from China. We've already seen some China antics over Taiwan. I think it's going to continue and expand over the next 6 months.
And I enjoy checking out your podcast, Thought to Action. That's at londoncenter.org. And you've got a special guest in this week.
Well, we actually had Monica Crowley on this week. We had her on to talk about this insane $600 monitoring from the IRS. So she's out right now. You know, she worked for the Treasury Department under the Trump administration. And next week, I'll be interviewing Andy Biggs, the chair of the Freedom Caucus. And we'll be talking about the Colonel Schiller issue and the Afghan debacle, probably, when we talk.
And I got one last question for you. I mean,
sure.
You're talking to military people at all levels of the military throughout the week. What do you get a sense of their morale these days under the Biden administration? You know, there were a lot of question marks about how the military was reacting to some of the things that former President Trump would say sometimes. But what are you getting out of the military attitudes now about this president?
I think a lot of people seem to be thinking about how quicker they can find the door. It's like if they really want to sustain, is this the military? The one thing I keep hearing is this is not the military I joined. And that's a pretty dangerous thing for people to say, and I hear that a lot. So people are, I think, thinking twice about why they're in service, what that service means, and if service is adequate for them to continue under a president who seems completely unable to make proper and effective strategic decisions.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, again, the Thought to Action podcast, available at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you as always.
Thank you, Rick.
You betcha. It's 7:46. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. KT McFarland's coming up next, but right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Virginia side of the Beltway, outer loop, there is construction in McLean. This is at the Dulles Toll Road, exit 45. On 66 in Fairfax County, all clear on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. On 95 in Virginia, from the Beltway down to Fredericksburg, northbound and southbound lanes are at speed. In D.C., 295, 395, and 695, no delays there. And on the outer loop of the Beltway in Montgomery County, there is a crash. Three right lanes are blocked approaching New Hampshire Avenue. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, after a delightful end to the week, we are expecting more nice conditions for this weekend. Today will be a little bit warmer, highs in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Now, later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the region. Some increasing clouds as we head towards your Sunday. We're expecting rain chances to be minimal. Best chance in the mountains and the Appalachians. I think the D.C. Metro will be dry. High temperatures tomorrow in the low and mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
50 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47 on the Saturday Morning Update. We just heard Tony Schaefer's assessment of that testimony on Capitol Hill. We'll get KT McFarland's perspective next.
Washington's best way to wake up. O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. Weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on WMAL.
It's 7:50. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by K.T. McFarland. She was the first Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., good morning, and we are always honored to have you on board.
Pleasure and an honor to be with you, too.
You have penned an opinion piece at FoxNews.com. The headline, Afghanistan was a fiasco, and our woke military political leaders will never be held accountable. There is something seriously wrong with the senior leadership of our armed forces. There was testimony on Capitol Hill this week, and I want to play two clips real quick because I think this helps to put this all in perspective. And this, first off, this is a very short clip of George Stephanopoulos asking President Biden about that 2,500 troop number and the president denying that it was ever recommended to him.
Your military advisors did not tell you, no, we should just keep 2,500 troops.
No, no one said that to me that I can recall.
Now, there was testimony on Capitol Hill this week. The Republican senator from Louisiana is Mike Johnson. And here's how he asked the Secretary of Defense about that same question. He asked Lloyd Austin about it. And here was the Secretary of Defense's response.
What did the president know? Did he forget what was told to him? Or is he not being truthful?
I view that as an inappropriate question, and I won't.
Well, you may, but the American people don't. And the American people want and deserve accountability.
Well, KT, how did all of this hit you as you watched it, especially with your experience not only at the White House but at the Pentagon?
Well, the first and obvious one is that either the president was lying or the generals were lying, or probably even more terrifying, the president doesn't remember. And to have a president who doesn't remember the most important military decision he's going to make in his presidency, I mean, that's truly terrifying. But put that aside for a minute, and let's just focus on those three generals. You know, they were like the little kids who put their hands in front of their eyes and their ears and their mouths. We see no evil, we hear no evil, we speak no evil. The generals kept insisting that they'd done nothing wrong. They bore no responsibility for what happened. And to watch them, they deflected, they bobbed, they weaved, they tried to spin, probably one of the most significant military disasters in our history, into a great success. Nothing was their fault. It was the incompetent Afghan military. It was the corrupt Afghan president. It was the weather. By the time they were finished, they even threw the president under the bus. You know, I just am so upset at the thought that nobody will be held accountable for one of the most shambolic and shameful events in our history. And these three generals, it's not just about the withdrawal. These three generals made their careers in Afghanistan and Iraq. Over the years and other jobs that they've had, they trotted up to Capitol Hill year after year saying that victory was right around the corner. All they needed was a few billion more dollars, a few more months, a few thousand more troops. If they knew it would end badly, why didn't they tell us this years ago? If their motives were so pure, why will they, you know what they'll do, they'll take off their uniforms when they retire and take high-paying jobs and become fat cats with defense contractors and become lobbyists. You know, and then again, why did General Milley spend hours with authors and reporters spinning himself into this brilliant strategist, politically correct soldier? You know, he should have spent his time crafting a withdrawal plan that would save American lives and prevent the rise of a super-armed terrorist regime. I mean, all I could do is I was watching the generals at the same time compare their behavior to a real hero, the Marine Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller, who, much decorated Afghan war veteran, who last month spoke out in behalf of the rank-and-file military and the junior officers who want answers from their senior military leaders. He demands accountability. What was the response of the senior military? They relieved him of command. And then while the generals were busy spinning on Capitol Hill, they took that man, Lieutenant Colonel Scheller, and they hit him with a gag order and they threw him in jail. So he's now being held in pretrial confinement, although the date, the time, the specific charges against him, they haven't decided those yet. And meanwhile, those three generals were just wrapping themselves in the bloody flag of the men and women who fought, bled, and died in Afghanistan. I just found it shameful. And they're all going to get off scot-free. They won't be held accountable. You know, there's something very wrong with the senior leadership of our armed forces. They have taken a sacred, nonpartisan, universally respected organization, probably the only respected institution in America today, and they have turned it into a woke, politically correct, media-focused, almost militarily incompetent institution. And I contrast that with the general, with the lieutenant colonel in the Marines who risked his life fighting in Afghanistan. He threw away his career asking that senior leaders be held accountable and ask her questions. And my only conclusion, as I finally watched the second day come to an end, those three generals, they're not heroes. They're not leaders. They're just political hacks in uniforms.
So we have the testimony, and it was very intense, a couple days of testimony between the House and the Senate. When all is said and done, what happens next? Does this just completely blow over? Is there no accountability at this point? Do we just move on?
I think there's no accountability. First of all, the first question, which is who's lying, the president or the generals? Well, you're never going to get the president to testify, and he'll, you know, you think the media is going to ask him a tough question like that? No. They're much more interested in what kind of ice cream he likes. And as far as the generals themselves, there probably won't be an investigation. They're going to get off scot-free. And when they leave the military, what are they going to do? They're going to go on joint boards of defense contractors. They're going to become lobbyists. They're going to be rewarded for their incompetence. And I would just contrast that to the American men and women who fought and bled and died. You know, generals don't die. They don't get injured. They don't even fight wars anymore. They're back at headquarters. And contrast it to the 2,500 who died and the tens of thousands who are going to carry lifelong injuries and their families who are going to have to cope with all of that. Just the contrast is just, it's unbearable. And to see what those people, those men, have done to the institution of the United States Army and the United States military, they broke it. They broke it over 20 years, but they didn't break themselves. They'll get off scot-free. I think that's one of the things, one of the reasons why the rest of the country just hates Washington.
We'll see what happens in the midterms, if anything. KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, and you will find her opinion piece at foxnews.com. Again, the headline on it, Afghanistan was a fiasco and our woke military political leaders will never be held accountable. KT, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
That's going to wrap things up for the Saturday morning update this morning. Garden Sense will follow the 8 o'clock news here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media Station.